The Steve Cochran Show.
That's down into the right field corner. It'll get down, hit the wall. Bryant will dig for third. They're going to bring it. The throw, mishandled, 1-0 Chicago. He does, and a base hit. Here comes Rizzo. No throw to the plate. Schwarber's delivered, 2-0.
Obviously, a lot of excitement. There was a lot of emotion there. You know, obviously, you know, I really don't remember that moment.
That's one into the corner. A rocket. Rizzo will dig for third. Zobrist to third. 3-0 Chicago. Schwarber with another base hit. Comes up 4-0 here in the fifth inning. To the right side, Kipnis. A juggle. And a safe. That loads him up. He's walking. And it's 5-0 Chicago in the fifth. Ground ball is short. Addison Russell. The Cubs have evened the series. A 5-1 win in a 4-hour, 4-minute game.
I think the folks will be jacked up about the win tonight.
And we're back!
Hey, hey, hey!
Don't worry about a thing.
You know, it really comes down to that, doesn't it? I was looking at Weather Channel radar last night, because even though these times they are changing, the average Cub fan's job is worry first, root later. So I'm looking at the weather radar and I'm thinking, okay, they're up 5-0, but there's a lot of rain that's about to come in. And if this thing gets rained out or stopped in the seventh, there's a rule that says you can't rain out a playoff game.
Right.
And it's going to rain all day Thursday. Maybe it's two more days before they finish this, before you go to Wrigley. And Arrieta's just... By the time I got through all of that, it was the bottom of the eighth. I was dozing off. Arrieta was out of the game, and it was 6-1. But the fact of the matter is, the rain held off, and I now believe that Mother Nature's a Cub fan.
I think so, too. Yeah.
I think so. It was pretty remarkable. If you looked at the radar any time yesterday, it looked like it was just one big green glob heading towards
Cleveland. A lot of
orange
in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they got it in.
Didn't Skilling have anything to do with it?
No, he was off yesterday.
Yeah, but why? Was he off? Maybe he was off because he was directing a weather system.
He could have been.
I think it was Santo. I think he's going.
Ernie, I think they all had.
Hold on, baby. Hold on.
Santo, I don't think Santo works weather. Maybe Santo more of an Ernie called thing? Skilling.
Be more of a hairy thing.
No, you know, now you say that. That's true. It would have been Ernie, right?
Yeah.
Ernie. A beautiful day.
Ernie.
Let's play two.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ernie's the weather guy.
Ernie's the man.
It actually started to rain a little bit right at the end of the game.
Yeah. And apparently, now it's like a deluge. A deluge. Which, by the way, is a word from some undescript European country.
Did you hear the comment?
Nondescript.
Did you hear the commentators last night, which they drive me nuts anyway, but they were worried about the rain coming in for Thursday. And they kept saying, well, it's going to rain when they fly out, when they all leave, when they travel. Dude, focus on the now.
No, look, here's the thing. Nobody so wants bad. To be caught at the airport. You know? I mean, come on.
I don't think they would have a problem, though. I don't think they'd...
I have to say the best part of this morning was calling my cousin who lives in Cleveland, who punked me yesterday all day.
What do you mean punked you?
She just all day yesterday. She called me and said they were barbecuing a goat.
All this.
So I called her this morning when I woke up at 3 a.m. and gave her the old Nelson from Simpsons.
Well, it's sweet of you to call at 3. Good morning, cuz.
Good morning.
Can you imagine if you had to call all your cousins?
Oh, my God.
Good God. You'd be
I'd
gone
still
all day.
Be home. If I started last night, it'd probably take me through the weekend.
As Dave just laid out for you, and Dave, I feel better for you. The pressure on you today would have been immense because as the voice of reason for Chicago sports, as opposed to a bunch of yakking sports talk goofballs on the Score and ESPN, you're the one guy Chicago can turn to for a legitimate, level-headed viewpoint. And I thought today you'd be talking everybody off the ledge. Now you don't have to.
I knew I wasn't going to be talking feeling, Steve.
Yes.
I think I said it yesterday. The Cubs were going to win last night. And I think, look, they have a great chance to win three games at home.
Yes, they do.
And get this thing over.
Can you have your best people look into the last time we had a three games at home sweep after a split in the first two? I don't think it's been that long.
You mean
any... Like a home team, like the home game, the home team, the visiting team at the start of the series, the home team wraps it up in game five. Because I think there's fairly recent precedent for this. I mean, as entertaining as I, you know, it's funny. I always in October, I always want 7-game World Series because I feel bad when baseball's over because winter tomorrow,
right?
And you know, now I've got hockey to live for, and I love hockey best. But the fact is, when baseball ends, it's sort of sad.
Yeah, it is a little sad. It's like the end of summer.
We don't want a 7-game series.
No.
No seven-game series. No.
Doesn't it bother you a little bit, though, that, you know, we have this kind of weather? It's like, couldn't they shorten the season a little bit in the middle so we don't end up with this? You know,
I still maintain they got to figure out a way to do the revenue differently, where you put it back to 154-game season, mm-hmm. the way it was forever.
Yep. I agree.
And you take 2 weeks off the end of the season, and you don't have these kind of issues,
no question.
Yeah.
I would skip the All-Star game.
Ooh,
no break. Right.
Who'd want to miss that show?
Yeah.
Would that ever, you know, whoever wins the All-Star game gets home field advantage? Mm-hmm. Would they ever change that rule?
Well, it's only been in play for 10 years.
Yeah, that's kind of a crazy rule.
That's a dumb rule. But you know what I'm enjoying is all of the firsts, because I know the Cubs haven't been, well, they haven't won since 1908. They haven't been since 45. But I'm enjoying watching the firsts, like the Dexter Fowler, of course, being the first African-American Cub to bat. And the other, there's just all these little stats. Like yesterday, Kyle Schwarber, the first Cub to come back from an injury and not play all season, and, you know.
Schwarber's been unbelievable.
He really
crazy
is.
Crazy good.
Really is.
I don't know if he must have played a lot of wiffle ball when he was down.
They
his
said,
hand eye is good.
They said he took 1,300 pitches. He took
essentially simulated spring training.
Right.
In
3 days.
Yeah, in 3 days.
Chris Bryant had the first hit for the Cubs in a World Series game since 1945. Jake Arrieta was the first winning pitcher since Claude Passeau threw a 3-0 victory at Detroit in Game 3 of the 45 World Series.
And one of the Cubs coaches, and I don't want to say who, but it's a very good source, apparently had a vasectomy in the clubhouse during a down period of time, and nobody's ever done that before.
Right, first to have a medical procedure.
You didn't hear about that?
Apparently
my sources are better.
Yeah, I guess so, Steve.
I just read a good one that Ben Zobrist became the second player to get 3 hits in consecutive World Series openers. The other one, Babe Ruth.
Isn't
it 27 and 28?
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
That's cool.
The nerdville that baseball is. Isn't it amazing the amount of statistics that are kept sideways?
Well, didn't Chapman get the first save since Germany surrendered?
That could be true.
You were asking about winning game two. Since they've gone to the 2-3-2 format, road teams that get a split of the first two, as the Cubs have a 45% chance of winning. Of the times that the World Series has been tied 1-1, the winner of Game 2 has gone on to win the series 50.9% of the time. So a little better.
That's more than half.
A little better than half. I think the Cubs.
Well, we're looking for a Sunday night wrap-up.
Yeah, I think we are. I think we are.
Hey, let's be honest. We got to get on to hockey. You know, we need to focus anyway. So let's wrap it up Sunday night, have a cute little parade next week, and then let's move on to the hockey.
Joe Maddon says stay in the moment.
Yeah.
He says, stay in the moment, Steve.
For tonight. The off night.
No, stay in the moment for the series. Then we'll get off.
Okay.
There's lots of time.
Try to stay in
the
moment. It's an off night. Tonight I'm off. Right?
Okay.
Yeah,
yes, you were off.
I think it says a lot that the Bears aren't playing any more games.
Yeah.
It says they just stopped. They're like, we're done.
Who? Ever.
They shut down early. I will say that. Yeah. Yeah. At 6:20, there is a huge story, and I don't like to use the word huge very often because, you know, it's associated with people that I'm not that fond of. But there's a huge story about the mess that the Clinton Foundation is and what Bill Clinton may have gained and whether or not it was more than a just ethical violation, but possibly dirtier than that. It's a Washington Post story this morning. Chuck Todleman in about 20 minutes. I'll ask him about it. And we'll talk about it off and on throughout the morning with politics coming up as well. But this is a Christmas October surprise, thanks to Julian Assange and the dirtballs at WikiLeaks and the dirtballs that stole Donald Trump's tax returns. This is the new culture we're in. But if it's legitimate information the public needs to know to craft a vote, I'm glad it's out, and this appears to be that. 6:20, back with your, what do we got, Nick? We got Nick looking at some movies for us before we get to anything else. That's coming up on 720 WGN.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GM's Cochrane Show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
6:25 now, and Nick DiGiulio joins us now. Still Really an emotional basket case from the Cubs clinching the shot at the World Series, let alone their win last night.
Oh, my God. So here's the thing about last night. I made an adjustment from Tuesday night.
You did.
And I think that's why they won.
Different couch?
No. Here's the thing.
Well, explain Tuesday to your friend. Well, explain. Yeah, what were you doing Tuesday?
I was sitting in front of the TV watching it on my couch.
All right. Now, hold on. Sitting in front of the TV watching it on your couch. Totally different from last night. How?
I was wearing pants Tuesday night.
I'm not sure this is an upgrade, but look, whatever works.
Listen, here's the deal. Every piece of clothing that I wear has to have the Cubs on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any Cubs pants. I do have Cubs boxers.
Well, there you go.
I do have Cubs socks.
There you go.
So I took my pants off last night, and every piece of clothing, from the hat to the jersey to the shirt to the wristband to the socks to the boxers, had a Cubs logo on it.
Hold on a second. You had a wristband for watching the game?
That's right, because I have a Cubs wristband. I wanted to put it on.
No, this is a visual I'm never going to get out of my head.
I just wonder if you were breaking out in a sweat so you could go to the wristband.
Like Bjorn Borg.
I was swiping my head with it. But I wasn't really sweating because I didn't have pants on.
Right. You were cool and comfortable.
I had a nice breeze going. It was fine. Tomorrow night, actually all weekend, no pants.
Well, I don't blame you.
I will be pants free all weekend.
I think this is what the public's demanding, not for the regular reasons, but for the Cubs' continued success.
That's what I think, too. You know, the weird thing is I'm probably going to order a pizza on Saturday, but I'm not putting the pants on when the guy delivers it.
Can you imagine what pizza delivery guys see? I think you without pants is the easiest part of their night. Come on.
Yeah. That's right. True. I swear to you, I did not have pants on watching the game last night.
Oh, believe me, I've never doubted it. Yeah. Yeah. From the moment you said it, I could actually believe it was true. I will say this. Okay. This opens us up to a text question. We won't have time to get to any of these, but I'd love to see your answers. And if we get a few interesting ones, we can pop them in. What ridiculous, superstitious thing do you do to try to keep the Cubs winning, whether it's not wear your pants, wear your sweatband, whatever it is? What's your crazy, superstitious thing that you do?
Let me quickly tell you a story about the Hawks. During the 2010 run, I was over at a friend's house. There were like 10 people there. We were watching. I can't remember which. I think it was the Nashville, but it wasn't Game 5. I watched that one at home. Nashville 2010. I think it was that series. It was that series. And the Hawks hadn't scored in a while. So one of the guys went up and went to the bathroom. And while he was in the bathroom, they scored. We made him stay in the bathroom for the rest of the period.
You can't come out.
You were in the bathroom when they scored. That's You're funny. Staying in the bathroom. Now, luckily, we had a TV in the bathroom.
Right.
But he stayed in the bathroom till the end of the game. It was the third period. He stayed in the bathroom till the end of the game, and they won.
Well, that's generous of you. There's no question about that.
Go back to the bathroom, man.
I
stand in here.
Godfather's your next movie at the Movie Co. We can plug that down the road when we have more time. What's Moonlight?
Moonlight is what is being called, without question, the best film of the year, like by miles. This is a movie that premiered at the Toronto Film Festival. It is made by a new director. He only made one film before this. It's the story of a young man growing up in Miami during the war on drugs period. He's got a very dysfunctional life, has very much a troubled home and a troubled upbringing. It's told in three chapters during three different parts of his life where he comes to terms with his family, with his sexuality, and with the really, you know, sort of terrible life that he's leading in Miami at this time. It's coming out with a series of reviews that you can't top. I the word masterpiece has been used in almost every review I've read of this movie. It at this point, when it comes out on Friday, it'll be the leading contender for possibly Best Picture of the Year. I've not seen it. I'm going to see it Friday afternoon before I take my pants off for the game. So it's
don't screw that order up.
yeah.
Just make sure you write that down so you do it in the right order.
Yeah.
And who stars in it again?
Nobody really. It's a low budget film. The actors are unknown. The director, it's only his second film. His first movie was a low budget film that came out about 4 years ago that played the festival circuit, never really got a release. This is truly one of those movies that has come out of nowhere. You know, when it debuted at the film festivals earlier this year, the superlatives just came out flying, and it's going to get a major release from a studio called A24. and they're putting everything behind it. They're saying that this is the deal, and people are saying that it's the film of the year without question. Some people even said it's the film of the decade.
Wow. Well, there's nothing to live up to there. And give me 30 seconds on Inferno.
I don't know what the hell. It's the third Da Vinci Code movie with Tom Hanks running around with bad hair. I don't know. They had a second. I don't remember the name of the second. You remember the name of the second one? Like The Secret Box of Balls or whatever?
Dan Brown's second movie about the Vatican. I think that was what it was called.
Angels and Demons.
Angels and Demons. Very good.
Oh, there it is. Angels and... Yeah, I thought it was The Secret Box of Balls.
No.
No, but it's not.
Nope, turns out it wasn't.
No, that's just... No, that's not what it is. That's just me on the couch on Friday night.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, all right. Now there has to be a meeting. You just made your own out of context. That's unbelievable.
Oh, no. Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize it.
And so you don't know if it's any good or not. All right. You're Nick DiGilio, and follow Nick on Facebook, and don't follow him home because he's not wearing clothes. And take a break. Come back. It's your big story next. And Chuck Todd on the way on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And people literally can say anything today. I mean, I saw where her opponent attacked my foundation. I spent 15 years building that thing. We just were rated. We got the top rating from all three major charity raters. Charity Navigator, the last one, gave us a higher grade than the Red Cross. Because we're open and transparent, and we put a huge percentage of the donations right into work.
Well, we don't have a lot to discuss in regards to Mr. Trump this morning, which should please most Trump supporters, because it's all about Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. Washington Post story broke, well, last night, about a man named Douglas Band, who Bill Clinton has given credit for conceptualizing the Clinton Global Initiative, this big annual get-together of world leaders and business leaders. The last one held recently, but... that one was more of a celebratory party in some to some extent for people that had contributed. Ideas, of course, were shared there. And I don't think the question is, did the Clinton Global Initiative and does it do good work around the world? The question is, did Bill Clinton and or Hillary Clinton get rich off it before she was Secretary of State and after she became Secretary of State? The bottom line this morning is Chuck Todd, Meet the Press, joins us. Chuck, this is all bad for the Clinton campaign until it isn't.
Well, look, it's on one hand, it only confirms a lot of suspicion that had been out there that Bill Clinton's private businesses and his foundation work are just way too commingled. As a former president, if Hillary Clinton weren't running for anything and weren't serving the government, you know, nobody would care. This isn't a story. And you would sit there and say, yeah, boy, you know, looks a little messy. What are you doing there? The minute you have the idea that he still has influence, look, let me go to bottom line. There is no way on any circumstance that the Clinton Foundation should be operating if she becomes president. I don't see how they can keep that going. I just don't.
Well, it just seems to me, Chuck, the right thing to do is something that Hillary Clinton seems incapable of doing, and that's standing up today and making a speech that says, as a private citizen, prior to me becoming Secretary of State and after I served in the Senate, I made speeches and was handsomely paid for those. My husband, the ex-president, was paid a fair market value for speeches at the time as well. But to say that, you've got to also be able to say, and prove that not once did any of those speeches turn into a favor made by the State Department on behalf of the people of this country. And can they prove that?
Yeah, the ease with which somebody apparently, if you give money to Clinton or the foundation, you get personal FaceTime with Clinton. I mean, that's what it looks like was done here. And what's interesting about this Doug Band memo, and Doug Band has been a lightning rod in Clinton world for some time, and there have been, you know, if there's one good piece of news for Hillary Clinton is that, you know, Chelsea for years, to the last few years, had been trying to kick Doug Band off, thought Doug Band was misusing the foundation, misusing her father, things like that. That's not a great corrective for Hillary Clinton, but at least you can say there's a plausible story here that perhaps Hillary Clinton's side wasn't a big fan of what was going on, Bill Clinton's side. So there is some, I don't know, you could have, they have some credibility that if they shut it down, you know, that they could do a backstory on here that, you know, sort of Hillary Clinton's side of things didn't know exactly what was going on in Bill Clinton's side of things. I'm not saying the public's going to eat that, believe that very well, but there is something to that. And she's got an opportunity, again, if she, you know, doesn't do half measures here, if they shut it down, to at least make this, to limit the political damage.
You know, there's a piece in the Washington Post story, by the way, Rosalind Helderman and Tom Hamburger deserve credit for it, but there's a piece in the story that talks about a potential $66 million being raised. It seems to indicate that would be personal funds for the Clintons, mostly Bill Clinton. Having said all of that, how much of this memo, knowing what you know about Doug Band, is Doug Band bragging versus factual damaging evidence?
Well, I think it's all factual. I think it's Doug Band's, I mean, it's clear that it was Doug Band's way of saying, hey, if you're going to say I have a conflict of interest issue, or you're going to say that I'm, you have one person here who's a walking conflict of interest, and that's the former president of the United States. It's like, if you're going to hold me to some rules that the Obama administration is insisting on when it comes to the Clinton Foundation, then you need to hold the former president. I mean, that's what it felt like when you read this memo, which you can now tell, I mean, here's what we do know. Doug Band got rich off of Bill Clinton's foundation. And it looks like the way he got away with it is he made sure that Bill Clinton was paid as well. Like, that to me is what we see here. Is any of this criminal? No. Is all of this problematic if one of the Clintons is an elected official and one of them is the actual president of the United States? You're darn straight.
All right, so let's say she wins. We can take this up down the road. If she wins, let the investigations begin and let Congress grind to a halt again and let the people's business take a back seat. All of those good times are still ahead if she wins. Is this story, and keeping in mind the lead messenger is Donald Trump, is this story able to be boiled down in a way that doesn't just turn into white noise for Clinton supporters and more of what Trump supporters already believe they knew, so that those in the middle who maybe still are swayable, and I think there's a sizable chunk there, that they would move one way or the other?
I don't know if it moves it. I don't. I mean, I think it depends on your reason for why you haven't been with Trump. You know, if your reason is on temperament, if your reason is on a few things, then I don't know if this story moves, you know, because it does go back to it. If you already, there's a lot of people who have already baked in this sort of Clinton ethical mess into factoring their vote. So I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I think if there was more direct Hillary Clinton connection here, there would be more of an opportunity. This is about Bill Clinton. There is some distinction and some separation there, I think, for some voters. But a lot of it has to do with how she handles this today. I mean, you know, they want to insist that everything, oh, this was found via the John Podesta hack, and so therefore we're not going to comment on it. It's Russian this, Russian that. We don't know how authentic it is. But Doug Band's company basically confirmed the authenticity of the memo.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, so the Julian Assange piece, that's a separate. No, I was just going to say that the WikiLeaks thing disgusts me, but it's a completely separate argument. Once the stuff is out there and it's been confirmed, it has to be discussed.
Well, and not only that, this has been authenticated. Not everything in WikiLeaks we can say we've authenticated. This one has. Doug Band's company essentially authenticated the memo. So, look, I think she has to speak out about this today, and I think anything short of Clinton Foundation is being shut down.
I agree.
If she's elected president. I don't think there's any other excellent.
Yeah, and how about an acknowledgement that people's suspicions are warranted? How about saying to the public, I understand why this would look troubling.
Right. If you shut it down, you acknowledge that. That's what I mean. I agree. I mean, I think if they don't, then, you know, then she can look forward, if she is elected president, to a miserable 4 years, all because they're so stubborn about a couple million dollars of her speaking fees. and the Clinton Foundation.
This notion that they didn't know that she was going to run for president and that there shouldn't have been a plan to do the right thing after everything that happened that screwed up Bill Clinton's presidency, mostly of his own making. Mm-hmm. It's just stunning. Pat, say hi to Chuck.
Now you know why. Now you know why so many American voters have been struggling with this decision.
Well, I know. I knew why. I thought you were going to say, now you know why I'm taking a six-month vacation after Election Day. You speaking.
You know, there is so many people who I've talked to who say, you know, boy, on paper, I think she's, you know, qualified. She's just, but there's always so much drama. Ugh. And messiness that comes with the Clintons
so
and
tedious.
With them in politics. And everybody knows it's going to be a miserable 4 years.
Hey, Chuck, Pat, how you doing?
Just on the side stuff. You know, you just know it.
Sorry, but hey, Chuck, Pat Brady, how you doing?
Good.
What does this do, or does this help the down ticket, maybe Senate races that can make the argument we don't want to give the keys to the kingdom to the Clintons?
It's funny you say that. I think so. You know, it actually eerily reminds me of, I don't know if you remember, about this point in time in 96. And Bill Clinton opened up a pretty big league on Bob Dole. Republican Party basically said, you know, we're done. Dole can't win. It's about making sure Democrats don't win back the House, solidify Senate races. And another shady fundraising angle to the Clinton fundraising story broke at that time. If you remember, there's a whole bunch of the coffees, the White House, and all this stuff. And it broke about right now. I can't remember which specific angle broke right now at this point in time. But it literally, you talk to anybody, it's like, that was how Democrats lost their shot at the House. It is how Democrats lost their shot at the Senate at that time. And that is something I suspect. I think too many votes have been cast. I think this die is cast on Trump. I just don't think that there's any movement there for him. But I do think this is good news down the ticket. For the Republicans.
Chuck Todd and Meet the Press Sunday and MTP Daily on MSNBC. This should be a really good day for Donald Trump's campaign. What's he even money on? He comes out and makes a speech at noon, and the first 10 minutes is about the women that accused him or anything else he feels he's been slighted on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like how, you know, so the Obamacare day should have been a good day for Donald Trump, too, and he somehow botched that. So, you know, and obviously, his foundation is you know, an ethical mess himself. So, you know, it is, I don't know, how long is this list that you go down that, you know, Donald, if it wasn't for Donald Trump, generic Republican nominee X would be able to take advantage of it, but Donald Trump uniquely can't, you know.
Hey, one last question, because I know you're short on time here, but Julian Assange, what's in this for him in the big picture?
Oh, I don't know. But for him, I think, you know, he had personally blamed Hillary Clinton for being in exile. He had, like, put it on her. And part of that is just officially it does come from the Secretary of State, you know, when those things happen. So, but he has personally somehow made this about her.
So it's a vengeance play, at least for what
it's
we know
totally
now.
Totally personal vengeance for him. Yeah.
All right. Great stuff, Chuck, as always, on another delightful morning.
You have to laugh. I mean, it's just
so ridiculous.
God, these two candidates. Oh, my God.
All right. Are they changing Hail to the Chief to the music when clowns come into a circus now? I mean, come on. So, all right, Chuck. All right. Enjoy the weekend. See you.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Again, that's Dave on guitar, legendary Axeman. He was actually the lead guitarist for Guns N' Roses until the fight with Axl. Yeah, probably didn't know that.
He got the worst of that.
That's what we said when we saw Dave. You should have seen the other guy. 7:13 now. Rick Pearson, finest political writer in America, knows good reporting. I'll ask him about the Washington Post story on the Clinton Foundation mess. But first, the host of the Sunday Spin will tell me who your guest is this Sunday morning.
Now, I've got Kent Redfield. He's an expert at the University of Illinois Springfield about campaign finance. And he and I will be talking about the enormous amounts of money being poured into these state legislative races that are going on throughout the state as the Rauner versus Madigan proxy war filters down to the legislature.
Pat Brady made a good point off the air a little bit ago. He said nobody's getting more TV time than Mike Madigan. Seems like every other commercial is Mike Madigan, and none of it's good. Where's that money coming from?
Well, that money is basically coming from Governor Rauner. The governor, all told, his campaign fund, himself, and his family has put in over $45 million into political campaigns this year.
And that money is in a PAC, or I mean, how do they funnel it? I guess is my question.
Well, part of it is from the Citizens for Rauner that gets funneled to the either to the Illinois Republican Party, to the Illinois House Republican Organization, the campaign arm of House Republicans. Gets funneled to House Republican leader Jim Durkin, and then that gets spread out to individual campaigns or in the form of those TV ads that you've been seeing. They've also been spread out to some aligned political action committees that support the governor.
Hey, Rick, does this not corroborate or substantiate some of the claims when they did these so-called reforms a couple years ago on campaign donations, that this system is not set up the best to really have a system where this kind of stuff doesn't happen?
Well, when the state enacted its own campaign finance changes and limits, that was before the Citizens United ruling. So as a result of the U.S. Supreme Court decision, a lot of those issues have been modified. And so when you have, for example, you have 15 races where there are no spending caps that exist, 15 legislative races, and that's largely because of outside money of over $100,000 being spent in these races. That's just outside independent expenditures. That's not even the candidate's money. That's not the leader's money. That's not the party money.
Is there any polling on the downstate races and the statewide races to see if this Madigan stuff's having any impact?
Well, I mean, there's been some polling, and certainly Madigan's numbers are tanked. I mean, he is getting more exposure in a negative way. He's getting more exposure entirely than I think he's ever gotten anywhere, because every one of these Republican ads that are running, even for people in the state Senate, Madigan is the House Speaker, even state senators that are Democrats are getting tagged as being aides and assistants or puppets to Mike Madigan. But downstate, certainly, which is a more conservative geography, that's an idea where Republicans think that they can pick up a couple of Democratic seats there, and in part because they think that Trump helps them down there.
I want to get to the most important issue in the most oppressed block of the electorate that's out there, and that would be Andrea.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I have to ask you, Rick, about the fallout from Alderman not being allowed to buy the World Series tickets. I'm telling you, when that came down, I thought, all right, you know, I think most
I got a little
us,
weepy. I got a little yeah, weepy, I'll
no,
be honest with you.
Completely opposite. You know, most of us being City of Chicago residents and taxpayers thought, fine, you know, the Ethics Board handed it down. But then to gripe about it yesterday openly, that was crazy to me.
Yeah, I think you can bring out the smallest violins in the world for this. You know, it's always been one of those things, and we've seen it in city council meetings before, particularly when it comes to issues of like pay or those kinds of things, where there's just that complete kind of, I guess you have to say, just kind of out of touch with who your constituents are kind of position. But certainly, you know, that tells you how some aldermen are living in their own bubble when it comes to these kinds of things, and just totally missing the real perception. And so often perception is really what the truth of politics is.
Well, what was embarrassing, I think, for me, not so much for them, but when Millie Santiago called the entire controversy insulting, humiliating, and embarrassing, and then complained that the seats were so bad they could touch the top of the
yeah.
roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I mean about that question of, you know, how do you relate to your constituents? I mean, how does any alderman a constituent relate to, oh, those were really lousy seats?
It's a hot mess is what it is. The Washington Post story, Inside Bill Clinton, Inc., out overnight is nothing but ugly for the Clinton Foundation, for the former president, and for the woman that wants to be the next president. Continued reporting throughout the day and continued stories, I'm sure, from these two fine reporters who deserve credit, Rosalind Helderman and Tom Hamburger at The Washington Post, could probably indicate even more. But have you had a chance to look over it? Do you see anything maybe that we haven't discussed yet?
I have looked over it. I have to tell you that, you know, these have been the same concerns throughout this campaign about the extent of just using the Clinton Foundation as a vehicle to enrich the Clintons. And, you know, this is why we are in this kind of mess we're in of this is the best that we have for our choices. It's an industry. Clinton created an industry.
So let me take the journalism hat off you for just a second. We're 2 weeks away. And does this move the needle? Chuck Todd didn't seem to think it would. It's too late, and it's too complex a story, and it just, what you just said, reaffirms everybody's views.
I would agree with Chuck. I think it's too late to move the needle. I think, really, the number of undecideds or persuadable voters is very, very small at this point. I don't think that it, and unfortunately, as Chuck said, it is too complicated. You know, those of us who follow this stuff, like I said, this is kind of stuff that we're not surprised to see. But at the same time, to try to condense that into a message, a simplistic message, which is what our politics is today, you know, try putting that into a Twitter feed. I don't think it works very well.
That's the upside for the Clintons today. Do you want to get in on our bet? We're trying to figure how long into Trump's speech today either his head will explode with glee or it'll take him to get into it because he's still going to accuse the women who accused him of lying, because this is Christmas morning for Trump.
Yeah, but I will tell you, he has a knack for taking events that would be beneficial to his campaign and either not mentioning them or burying them. So I would bet later than, if it's a 20-minute speech, I'd say about 16 minutes.
16. All right, we'll put you down for 16. Sunday Spin with Rick Pearson, finest political writer in America, Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com. You ought to get a couple of copies of the newspaper. It'll be good for you. You'll be smarter than the people you work with. And enjoy the day.
Plus great Cubs coverage as well.
Ah, look at you working the plug.
There we go.
At Rap30 all over social media, and let's get traffic. And then Eric Edelstein's back from his 12-week North Carolina vacation, and Pat Brady's here. Eric just said I'm number one. At least that's what I think that finger's for. And Pat Brady's here, and we'll continue to talk about today in campaign 2016.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And so to people who say, you're taking time out of swing states to go do this, you say?
I say the following. You have been covering me for the last long time. I did yesterday 8 stops and 3 major speeches, and I've been doing this for weeks straight. I left there for an hour and a half. I'm going to North Carolina right now, then I'm going to Florida, I'm going up to New Hampshire. For you to ask me that question is actually very insulting, because Hillary Clinton does 1 stop and then she goes home and sleeps. And yet you'll ask me that question. I think it's a very rude question, to be honest with you.
WGN.
Hey, you can't make it up.
Hey,
I mean, honestly,
as a reporter, do not ask a presidential candidate.
How dare you?
Your campaign.
You know what it is? It's a line from the debate on Saturday Night Live where Trump goes, you're ruining this for me because you're putting the things I say on TV. Eric Edelstein's back from North Carolina. How was your trip, darling?
I'm hoping to be the Kyle Schwarber of the Cochran Show. Come back after a long
absence. With limited at-bats.
And hit a couple.
Yeah. Boy, was he unbelievable. He is so good. Plus, I like Schwarber because he sort of looks like a guy that'd be playing 16-inch softball in Grant Park.
Totally.
How can you not root for that? All right, so let's start with the Democrats. I know you've only had limited opportunity to look over this Washington Post story. Does this confirm everything we thought we knew, or is there more here?
Well, I don't know that there's more there. These guys have been the most poked and prodded and looked at couple in American history. I think this
trying to use poked and Bill Clinton in the same sense.
Bad verb.
Yeah.
As you said, it reinforces what people believe, and I think it doesn't help the overall narrative. I do agree with Chuck and Rick. I don't think this changes much with you know, 12 days to go before this election. I think the cement has hardened, so to speak. There aren't a lot of undecideds left. I think these issues are bigger than, oh, the, you know, the foundation's done some really good stuff, but maybe there's some things that people can legitimately criticize. I don't think that's a new narrative at this point in the election.
Pat's been listening to me whine about this for the last half hour off the air. Are there enough people, well, I'll go to you on this, Ben. Are there enough people out there who would literally say at this point, I can't stand Trump? Yeah, he may be a sexual predator, but this is worse than I ever thought. We got to have something new. I'm going to vote for Trump. Are those people still out there?
I don't think so. And I think that early voting plays a big part of this. Eric and I were just talking off air. 60% of people vote before Election Day. This is not like 1980 when Reagan had a big surge at the end because everybody votes on Election Day. So I don't. I just don't think they're out there. My concern is with down ticket, the Senate races, which I think, and Chuck, I think, agree that this might help us with the argument, or down ticket guys with the men and women with the argument that we can't give the keys to the kingdom to the Clintons because we've got a lot of stuff we have questions
about. Well, explain that, though. The keys to the kingdom meaning that if the Democrats were to control the Senate and the House, there's your kingdom.
Yes, and Supreme Court nominees and a lot of things that are important that go through the Senate. I think that helps that argument. But I agree with Eric. I'm not sure how much it moves right now because this campaign's been going, I think, for 530 days now. I think people's opinions to a great extent are made up.
You agree with the down ballot theory?
Yeah, I mean,
it's not good for Democrats, certainly.
It's not good. I mean, and again, this is the biggest question of this election. I don't think there's much question that Hillary will win. I think the biggest question, it has been, it remains, and it's the big drama on election night, is what will the contours of this electorate look like? Will Republicans stay home? Will there be significant ticket splitting? Will minority voters come out in not so much like they did before in excitement for Obama, but in protest to Trump? And I think, you know, pollsters, we've talked about this a lot on this show, they're always estimating what the model of the electorate looks like based on past elections. I think we're in an unprecedented moment, and some of the early election returns that Pat's referring to do show the contours of the electorate being a little bit different, but we aren't going to really know that till election night.
You know, and they give these early voting numbers, but you can't make any sense of those if you know who actually came out and if they're your voters. That's part of a campaign's identifying who you think's going to vote for you. And no campaign's going to really tell you, unless it's super good news, that our voters are already out. So we don't really know if these were voters that were going to come out and vote anyway. Even Republicans that might end up voting Democrat, you just don't know from the early vote numbers.
Come back. We'll talk about what it means if she is, in fact, elected. It's hard to imagine that Trump will win at this point. But again, I said this to you off the air, too, Pat. I think I've brought this up on the air before, Andrea.
Oh, I've been wrong for 536
days. We were both wrong.
Saved your bar bill, though, didn't it?
You did. Saved you some money. Yeah. But my analogy.
Saved me on drinks. I put it to a donation. So,
my more direct analogy is this. We all thought Glenn Close was dead in the bathtub. Turns out she wasn't. Michael Douglas had to go get a weapon.
That's scary.
7:30. We're back after this. And yes, Trump is Glenn Close, for those of you who missed it. Back with more in a moment on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
You are fascinated with sex, and you don't care about public policy.
Me?
Now, that's
really
what I get out of watching you tonight.
And
you want to do you want to comment on whether the Clinton ticket has a relationship to a sexual predator?
Therefore,
we're going to send Bill Clinton back to the East Wing because, after all, you are worried about sexual predators.
We on the Kelly File have covered that story as well, sir. I
want to hear your words. Bill Clinton, sexual predator. I dare you.
By the way, congratulations, Newt, on last night. That was an amazing interview. It was an amazing. We don't play games, Newt, right? We don't play games.
Nah, we just grab them. Sexist old guys from coast to coast agree that Newt Gingrich may have had a point until Megyn Kelly shot him down. And rightfully so. The bastion of virtue that is Newt Gingrich, the clarity of ethics that is Newt Gingrich, a guy who spent 2 years trying to take Bill Clinton apart on the Monica Lewinsky thing, which, by the way, I didn't disagree with necessarily at the time, is now going to start preaching about whether sex should be discussed. Give me a frickin' break. And I'm a little tired of having surrogates and politicians tell reporters how to do their jobs. It's reporters' jobs to tell you how to do yours.
Steve, you thought it was just you with the Gingrich anger management problems when he was on the show.
Well,
right?
That's the thing. I wasn't even angry with Gingrich just so much as I just wanted to go, you can't believe anything that just fell out of your face when he made 6 completely false statements, which goes to a texter a second ago. So how come you don't have anybody that supports Trump on the show? It's because they can't have a conversation. You can't have a discussion. You're going to be screaming, I'm right, you're not, because I'm yelling louder.
Can I just add one thing about Newt Gingrich, who had an affair, who admitted to having an affair during the whole Clinton...
Yeah, it was uglier than that.
Yeah,
it was
discussing the divorce
that.
Terms with his wife when she was in the hospital recovering from cancer surgery.
Sorry to break it to you, but it is a story. It is a story. Bill Clinton's sexual predator behavior was a story then, and Donald Trump's sexual predator behavior is a story now.
You know what?
As is the emails.
But the Trump story... If they did this and orchestrated it, they did it perfectly because they put him out in his own words saying, this is what I can get away with because I'm a star, and then rolled out each of these allegations. So every time he denies it, they go, well no, you just admitted this is on tape.
Right, but you know what that is? What you're describing is the TV movie of the week. There is no way those 10 or 11 women, any more so than the Cosby women, came forward and said, I'd like to have my personal life turned upside down just for the sake of doing the right thing. Now, you can always find one or two that might want to play along because they got a restaurant to open or there's a little money involved, but I have no doubt that Bill Clinton, or I should say, yeah, that Bill Clinton, certainly back in the day, and Bill Cosby and Donald Trump all did something to those women that was illegal, wrong, and unwelcome.
Oh, absolutely. And that's. But my point is, the way it rolled out, his denials just don't ring true because we've already got him on tape saying this is what he thinks he's entitled to do.
The big story today is the Clinton email mess just got worse because the fine bastion of journalism that is Julian Assange and WikiLeaks released hacked emails, again, in a big Washington Post story, where a man named Doug Band, who I believe, Eric, you may remember this, I don't, was Band a Clinton advisor in the White House?
I don't know. He started, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe he started working for Bill Clinton after he was president. Okay. Became sort of his traveling companion and then was one of his first employees at the foundation.
And eventually.
Right-hand guy.
Eventually
he's
left the foundation.
Right. Yeah.
He kind of his flat guy, protector
right.
guy.
That's right.
And he eventually left the foundation, started a company called Tenio, which 20 clients of which... are said to have contributed money to the Clinton Foundation in exchange for access to Bill Clinton. The thing everybody has to remember, access to a former president from a public relations firm when that president is no longer in office is what it is. The same way Hillary Clinton making a speech on Wall Street is what it is. But if it tips over into the time that she's Secretary of State, that's where you have a huge problem.
Right. Now, there has been stories long before these WikiLeaks, and again, I don't know Doug Band, and obviously this is all hearsay, but there was a lot of good reporting that Band was at times taking advantage of that relationship unbeknownst to the former president to do some of these things. Now, what the truth is and all that, who knows? But I think one of the reasons he was kind of moved out was when it became to the attention of the Clintons that... sort of that access was being sold off, so to speak, or used to help his businesses, I think that the hammer came down.
Chelsea Clinton, who has been called a spoiled baby by a few more with agendas recently, maybe not so much. In 2011, concerned, this is again from the Washington Post story, concerned when the news leaked that MF Global, a hedge fund owned and operated by the former sleazeball governor of New Jersey, John Corzine, had been paying the Clinton-tied firm, Tenio, $125,000 a month leading up to the time that MF, interesting, that's their initials, MF went bankrupt. All of that leads to this story of a for-profit college, which President Clinton supposedly got $3.5 million a year for several years to be a consultant on. Look, legality, illegality, I don't think there's a lot here in regards to anybody going to jail, but it's a terrible, terrible story to have 2 weeks before, and all it does to me, correct me if I'm wrong, from your perspective, it sets up, if Hillary Clinton were to win, a parade of congressional hearings, a parade of investigations, a parade of bad, and nothing else gets done.
Well, it reinforces that the system works for a certain cadre of people and not for others, whether there's truth or not. I think, as I think Pearson said earlier, you know, perception becomes reality. So whether it's fair to point the finger at Hillary Clinton or not, the finger will get pointed, and I think it increases people's cynicism. I think there's and I'm not changing the subject, I think this is a very legitimate story, but I think there is another interesting narrative as we're heading for the finish line here, in that the whole narrative of her not being a great candidate and what kind of president she would be, I think it might be ironic. You know, we've all set up, our conventional wisdom is always wrong. And this notion that it'll be complete gridlock and Republicans will just stymie her at every turn and nothing will get done. Maybe it'll be the opposite. Maybe she'll be a bad candidate and a pretty good president who's able to actually work with Paul Ryan.
Are you going with bad girlfriend, good wife, good girlfriend, bad wife?
I'm just saying that we're so wrong on our conventional wisdom repeatedly, and we set up this narrative that nothing will get done and it's just going to be worse. The gridlock's going to be worse. Maybe it won't.
When's this going to be over?
I'd like to leave this on a bizarre.
Not soon enough.
I'd like to leave this on a positive note. I mean, you got to roll with me on this to stretch to make it positive. My daughter insisted I sit down and watch the White Helmets documentary. In the midst of all of this blathering about stuff that has no real impact on what the president will or won't do and who the president is or isn't, in Syria, it is hell on earth every single day. The White Helmets are a group of 2,600 heroes who are all volunteers from around Syria who aren't paid, who go out and respond to every Russian airstrike and every time a bomb blows up, every time a building is attacked, and they go in and they save lives. It is 40 minutes of your life that I think you ought to spend watching this. It's on Netflix. I don't know for how long. It's called The White Helmets. It's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen.
Is the doctor from Northwestern a part of that team?
It wasn't identified as that, but I thought the same thing. You know, I'd have to do more research to find out. But a 21-year-old kid from Syria went and shot this and told one interviewer, I wanted to have this on film before I was killed. The documentary filmmaker's still alive, as far as we know. And this is a group in particular who have lost members of their own family. And I don't want to spoil this for you, but there's one. It's very violent in spots, but it's mostly uplifting. And for any of us who ever walked down the street and thought, well, the Muslims, there they go again. Yep, every bad guy is a Muslim. You know, the vast majority of people who live in the worst parts of the world want the same thing you want. They want the kids to be able to go to school, and they want them to have a life, and they want them to do better than they did, and they want them to be okay. This is a great representation of that, and it's a real wake-up call to everybody. It's called The White Helmets, and heavily promoted by Amy Cochran, and if that's not good enough for you, I don't know what is. So I
heard
check
great.
It out.
I heard it's great.
Eric Adelstein, your company is what?
AL Media.
And Pat?
Next Generation Strategies.
It's great to see you two still getting along after campaign 2016.
We're just worn out.
Yeah, I'm just tired. I'll see you election.
Too tired to hit each other.
I'll see you at Kitty O'Shea's at 10:30.
We're punched out.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Come on! Not long ago, Kevin produced a lowly morning show in Chicago.
Lowly.
Now, baseball guru. Hey, Kev, before we ask you about the game last night, we have a Weber Q1200 Cubs portable propane gas grill. It's got the Cubs logo on the side of it. It's a sweet little grill. We're going to give another one away now. Let's go with caller 1000. What are we doing? What caller 1908? Is that what we're going to do?
Caller 720.
Oh, I'm told it's 7. Caller 7. Caller 7 is a big winner at 312-981-7200. You win the Cubs grill. From our friends at Apt Electronics, go see Steve Shapiro and all the great people at Apt and get yours while they're there. You were there last night, Kev, and I assume that when it was 5-0 and the rains were coming, you were doing what I was doing. Shut it down! No, you were saying finish it up and let's get out of here.
Yeah, well, I think everybody was sort of thinking that, except for Joe Maddon and Terry Francona. They were taking their time. The game was about 4 hours. That's after a 3-hour and 40-minute game one. I think that's a whole other issue is pace of play. Both of these managers like to go to the bullpen. That added to the length of the game. But, you know, I think the Cubs are lucky that the rain didn't really come in, because even when there was rain in the forecast, it was just sort of a light drizzle, so they were fine. But It was a long game, and some Indians fans either took shelter away from the late drizzle and to warm up, or they left early, because by the seventh inning, the upper deck was sort of clearing out. So
what do you make of that? Sure.
Long game, a game that felt like the Cubs really had it at hand, and the crummy weather. But I know the Indians are pretty diehard.
Yeah, and I would think upper deck is regular people tickets, you know, in World Series terms. I wouldn't think they'd be trying to, you know, what are they going to? Well, they're in a World Series every 70 years or so. So what's the big deal? Let's leave early.
Right. Right. So I don't want to draw it up too quickly to say they just booked it out of the stadium. Maybe they were inside of the concourse away from the rain. But, yeah, the upper deck was absolutely maybe 60% full by the end of the game.
Did not know that. Man, didn't know that. All right, so the Kyle Schwarber story is, all Cub fans are thinking about this today. What's your feel? Is he going to play the field?
Yeah, I think he will. People were sort of kidding on social media as he got those two hits, and he looked really good at the plate, that the medical staff all of a sudden was leaning towards clearing him playing defense because, you can't keep a bat like that out of the lineup. And Joe Maddon after the game said, yeah, it is the medical staff's decision. He's going to take some fly balls on the outfield today at Wrigley, and they'll see how the knee holds up. But, man, to me, to keep that bat out of the lineup, you got to have it at the plate as often as possible. It's really amazing what he's doing right now. Jake Arrieta said he's speechless to what Schwarber's doing. And other than the obvious, I think this is the story of the World Series right now, is what Schwarber's doing. I mean, if he keeps it up, he's in line to win MVP for the series. It's really kind of a crazy thing.
We want this wrapped up by Sunday night. We got a parade to throw. We got to get back to hockey. We got a lot going on. Anything quick for Kevin before we run out of time? Either one of you guys?
Well, no, I just think the idea of Schwarber being World Series MVP, which is absolutely possible. I don't know that it's necessarily probable. I mean, there's still a long way to go in the series. Right. But can you imagine a guy who hasn't played since April and wins World Series MVP? It would be one of the unbelievable stories. Yeah. Yeah.
Make the Kirk Gibson thing look like whatever.
Yeah.
I'll just say that, yeah, I really do think he if I had to guess or bet, I would say he's going to be in the lineup for Game 3 just because of how lethal his bat right now.
Who got pulled off the roster to make room for him?
Dan Sestrizny.
But we felt that was mostly for spelling.
Rob Sestrizny.
It was mostly a spelling thing on the jersey. Schwarber was shorter.
They lead the majors in Z's. They got three guys with two Z's in their name.
Kevin, what's the likelihood, and I know this is really a stretch, but what's the likelihood they could sweep and close this out at Wrigley?
1,000%.
Kevin.
Oh, yeah. Highly likely, especially when you hear – When you see what the Cubs did against Clayton Kershaw the second time around, and Anthony Rizzo's talked about that. The more they see a pitcher, the better they become at the plate. So although Corey Kluber was next to unhittable in Game 1, they'll face him in Game 4. But don't count this offense out. It is stacked, and the more they see a pitcher, the more dangerous they become.
It's Kevin. He'll be on later with Ro because that's the life he's leading now. And then he'll be at Wrigley all weekend. All baseball coverage. And, Kev, you're doing a great job.
Thank you. It's sponsored
by Wintrust Home of Cubs Checking and by Sloan Water Connects Us. We got a winner for that Cubs grill, Sandberg?
We do, Colleen Montanez. And she thanked me for giving it to her. She said, thank you, Mary Sandberg, Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet.
Ah, that's great. That's tremendous.
She's becoming famous.
Yes, she is. All right, John DeCoste will join me with Dean in a second. We got to do a blatant plug for our New Year's Eve show, which is selling tickets like hotcakes. We'll get to that coming up here in a couple of minutes. Let's get to the news now or next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more. Yeah,
8:14, Dean, I got a hilarious text a second ago. Why don't I go ahead and turn Dean's mic on so he could actually respond?
I said...
Yes.
I love a hilarious text.
Let me read it to you. 773. God, I wish Steve would just let the sports people give their report without interrupting constantly. And you know what I thought? So does Dave. Dave really wishes that, too.
I didn't even... we're talking.
All right.
I enjoy the interruptions. I'm a big fan of interruption.
What? Here's the list. Jay-Z in Prince business.
What?
Yeah, Jay-Z may be in the Prince business soon.
That's true.
This is your story.
I know. I remember sending that to you.
Michael Phelps got hitched or didn't he? Taylor Hicks is still alive. I think that's the headline. Possible return of ABBA, which is the greatest threat that Dean's heard all day. And then maybe a star or two on the World Series and our former friend Dee Snider in Chicago. No, he didn't call us.
What do you mean, your former friend?
He didn't call us.
What?
Showing up on TV, he didn't call us.
That's not right.
He normally tweets me.
Well, something happened. Somehow, apparently now it's your fault.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Musical stylings of John DeCoss and Dean. Our special guest for the second segment is John DeCoss.
John DeCoss?
Dean does fake enthusiasm better than just
good.
About anybody.
I felt special.
Hey, buddy!
Yeah, he's really good. He's really good. He can sell it.
Steve, this entertainment breaking news just coming in.
Yeah.
Anna Balaval.
Anna Balaval!
Will be sitting in with Bill Left today from 1 until 3 p.m.
Oh, okay.
Over most of the same station.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We love Anna.
She'll be the one.
But you can't say her name without yelling it.
What do you mean?
It's just fun. It's just fun to say Anna Balaval. Anna Balaval! It's just fun to say it.
I love her. Dean, when I'm out and about, people are always like, oh, Anna Balaval, which I take as a huge compliment. Mm-hmm. And then they see me and they're like, oh, yeah, you're not Anna Balaval.
I think they're mocking your name.
Huh? I think so.
Mm. Anna's right here.
No, I'm not mocking her name at all. I love her. I love her. I love her name.
Steve says he loves you.
Dean, tell her. Dean, tell her I love her too.
And Andrea says she loves you too.
I know that.
She's funny. She's a funny little one. All right, so why don't we start what we obviously should start with, the big story, and that is that John and I are doing a New Year's Eve show and at the Tivoli this year.
That's right.
And you got
what? The Tivoli?
The Tivoli. Yeah, good job by you again, Dean.
Dean, have you been to the Tivoli?
I have.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's gorgeous.
It is.
I love the old theaters.
God, it's absolutely great. Yeah, we're doing two this year. With 1 o'clock is at the Rau in Crystal Lake, where we've been the last 4 years. And then get tickets for that by going to rousecenter.org.
So we do a New Year's Eve matinee.
Yes.
At 1.
Yes. This is, and you've said this. This is for people who can't stay up till midnight. This is people who can't stay up after
until
brunch.
Dinner.
Till 4
yeah,
p.m.
Yeah, right. And then 6 o'clock at the Tivoli?
At the Tivoli in Downers Grove. Wow. And that one, you just go to classiccinemas.com, go to the Tivoli. Special events is New Year's Eve, Steve Cochran's New Year's Eve, and get tickets through them.
Have you arranged for a rickshaw to get me from Crystal Lake to Downers?
It's so funny you mention that. No.
Well, that seems right. All right, so how do we get tickets again?
Is this the first time you've done this regional?
Yeah, we're basically covering the whole state.
Wow.
It's a one-night tour. Tickets for both shows?
Tickets for both shows. RouseCenter.org for the 1 o'clock in Crystal Lake. Or go to classiccinemas.com. Click on Tivoli for the Tivoli Theater, and it's Eventbrite. Steve Cochran. Click on it. Buy your tickets.
When
and they're going
again?
Like hotcakes.
When is
are.
This again?
We're actually going to do it New Year's Eve.
What, yeah. Date, what date is that?
That's the 31st of December. Yeah. We still have it. Same date, 31st. It's only 2 months away. Watch this now, Dean. Watch. Hey, Mary Vandeveld, are you coming out to the New Year's Eve show?
I've told you how many times. I have a wedding. But I'd love to be there,
yeah,
Steve.
Yeah, of course you would.
I'd go to the Tivoli because it's actually close to my house.
That's why you'd go.
If you yeah. really liked the bride and groom, you would bring them to the show.
Yep, that's exactly right.
It's the perfect gift.
Let's start with the biggest story that's not the story we just did. The greatest threat Dean has heard all day to America. ABBA's getting back together?
I think it's great that ABBA's getting yes. back together.
Oh, that's right. You didn't like Pierce Brosnan.
I didn't like the movie version of Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
I like ABBA.
Okay.
I like the stage show Mamma Mia,
yeah.
usually.
Mm-hmm.
But that movie was horrific.
Gotta love ABBA Gold.
It was horrible. Love the album. I have it on my phone. I listen to it all the time. I love it.
Really? All and the time? When was the last time you listened to it?
5 minutes ago.
Okay.
I listen to ABBA every now and again. It's inspirational.
What?
Well, I wouldn't it go is. That
What
far.
Church are that's, you going
that's
to?
Winner portion. Takes it all.
No,
oh,
me I see. And no
money, money, money.
Dancing Queen.
Give Waterloo.
Me give me a man after midnight. It's inspirational.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So they've turned down one lucrative reunion offer after another.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Over 30 years they've been turning it down. But they did a benefit performance last summer, and they actually enjoyed getting back together and singing again. So they say that they're going to do it, but this is what they're saying about this show, that it's going to be very high-tech. It's going to be artificial intelligence and virtual reality. So they're not really saying what the details are, but this sounds like it could be some kind of ABBA multimedia hologram like kind of show. So maybe not them in the flesh, but still like an actual ABBA performance nonetheless.
And that's going to be in Chicago when?
They have not announced any of the details on it.
Make up a
but
make,
as
make
I'm
up a
thinking
date.
On this, New Year's Eve at 1 and 4 p.m.
Well, that's not what you want.
1 and 7 p.m.
1 and 6. Thanks for paying attention.
Sorry. but imagine this. Listen, when you guys get the technology on this where Steve and John and, you know, the your other comedians that appear with you guys, if you could do like a hologram show, you could be in 10, 12 different places at one time.
That's great. That is actually a good point. A lot of people behind my back call me a big, stupid hologram anyway.
Yeah, and you'd still be late.
Steve's hologram will be here in 10 minutes. Speaking of great music, I'm a Prince guy, as you know. This is the music of my people.
Me too.
And Prince's home in Chanhassen is great. And if you ever find yourself in Chanhassen, and you won't, because it's not that easy to get to.
You sound like you're swearing when you say Chanhassen.
No, Chanhassen.
Still sounds like I should be saying you're Chanhassen.
You're a big Chanhassen. I was lucky enough to be there many times. It's very cool. If you love Prince like I do, it's a museum now. Is that the deal?
They just opened Paisley Park as a museum this week.
Right. And now Jay-Z is buying the entire thing and closing it down again?
He's going to be buying Prince's unreleased music.
Wow.
They had made a deal before Prince passed away, because sometimes it's difficult to deal with somebody after they're dead.
Yeah, they don't call.
Before his death, he made a deal for Prince albums to be only on Jay-Z's music service Tidal. And now Prince wants to, or Jay-Z also wants to buy the unpublished music and put that on the Tidal service. $40 million is what the offer is right now.
That's cheap.
I think so, too. Prince's siblings and the manager of his estate all have to agree on this before anything will be final.
Of course, you have to find all his siblings. Some have yet to come out and claim they are.
There's 400 of them, I think so.
Michael Phelps got hitched?
Secretly. This is so interesting. Before
the, was it underwater?
Before the Summer Games. That would have been awesome if they had done that on a high dive board. Before the Summer Games, he announced that he was engaged to the former Miss California.
Mother of his child.
Mother of his child.
We saw a lot of crowd shots in the Olympics of those two.
A lot of all that. So they were saying that they were engaged. They're waiting mm-hmm. to set a date. Mm-hmm. Now, turns out that they had been married 2 months before the games ever started. Steve, they were lying to us is what they were doing. They were lying.
When an Olympic swimmer starts lying to you, what's next? Trump for president? I mean, come on. Something's going to stop.
These celebrities think they get off not sharing personal details of their life with us.
By the way, who knew Michael Phelps had a sense of humor? He's doing all these self-deprecating commercials now, picking on himself. It's pretty good.
We do like that. So anyway, he's married. He has been officially married since June to Nicole Johnson. Lovely couple.
Who's Taylor Hicks?
Taylor Hicks was a Mary? Who's Taylor Hicks? Mary can answer this, I'll bet.
Let's go live to Mary.
Former American Idol.
The worst American Idol ever picked.
What?
Like
really?
2005? Was it 2005?
Oh, it was a long time ago. It was like season five about, maybe.
And he was the winner. Wasn't he a kid from Alabama? That gray hair?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. But he wasn't a kid. I mean, he was like 30, wasn't he, when he was?
Yeah. Yeah.
But kid to me.
He was on a private plane going from Tennessee to Alabama. Private plane blew one of its engines. The whole one side of the plane covered in oil.
Oh, boy.
After the explosion, the pilot managed to safely land at an airport in Jasper, Alabama.
Yeah. And I believe it's pronounced Jasper.
Is it really?
No. Oh. by the way, the most surprising part of that story is not that Taylor Hicks is in the news, but the fact that Taylor Hicks was able to get on a private plane and not be a flight attendant. So I don't know what's going on there.
He's been very successful.
Oh, yes.
Post-American Idol.
Oh, well, then I take it all back.
Idol career. And
as far as you know, I take it all
back. He
has? Was very, oh, sure.
Big Vegas act.
Sure.
Well, Vegas act. Okay.
If you want to continue to see Dee Snider this morning, you won't hear him here because he's no longer our friend. He apparently only loves Channel 9 now, and he's been on Channel 9 all morning.
He's hilarious,
They
though.
Can't get him to leave. He's still at Channel 9.
A little handsy with Robin there.
He was a hilarious, though.
Yeah, that's great. Whatever. You guys have fun. I know you don't have this, but if you could, it'd be really cool. If you had anything Nicolas Cage might say on the World Series.
Well, you know, oddly, I spoke with Nicolas Cage yesterday. He's got a movie coming out. It's a comedy, Steve, about a man who wants to kill Osama bin Laden. Because really, there's nothing funnier than that.
There's nothing funnier than Nicolas Cage.
It's a movie. Hang on. I threw away the press release. The movie is called The Army of One.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out next week and then immediately on DVD.
Wait, is this about the guy? There was a guy. There was a guy here who literally, on his own dime, flew to Afghanistan, somehow got in country, and volunteered as a mercenary to kill bin Laden.
This is correct.
Is this the guy?
This is correct.
Okay.
So Nicolas Cage, you know, we do one of these satellite interviews with him yesterday, and we, you know, talk about the movie and all that. We talked about, he filmed his movie, The Weatherman, much of it, right here at WGN on Bradley Place.
With Tom Skilling.
With Tom Skilling's assistants. We talked about that. So, you know, all the celebrities that I'm talking to, I'm asking, you know, are you into baseball? Are you following the World Series? Who are you rooting for? And Nicolas Cage gave me the weirdest, most evasive answer.
I find that hard to believe.
To this question ever.
Sure, I love baseball, but I'm not going to, you know, choose a favorite right now because I know I'm in Cub Center, so I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to take the easy path out. But yeah, baseball is the great American institution.
Steve, I don't know if you caught that. Baseball is the great American institution. Baseball.
If you're in Cubs Central, wouldn't you therefore pick the Cubs?
Unless you're rooting for the Tribe.
I don't think he knows anything about baseball. I think he caught him off guard.
That's what I wonder. Does he just not know anything about it?
Yeah,
Is he secretly a Cleveland fan?
Ever since he did that motorcycle movie where his head caught on fire, I think his life has changed.
On the World Series, I think baseball is the great American institution.
It's the great American institution.
Stop the presses.
And I should be institutionalized.
Stop the presses.
All right, why don't you go back to your little friend there, Dee Snider, and tell him he's a big Chanhassen.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it was a pretty fun clip we had for you.
It's actually pretty good that he's not available. We don't have room for him. But tell him we love him anyway, all right?
I'm not going to do that.
All right, I don't blame you.
I'm not going to take it.
Worked in a plug.
Gonna take it.
All right, now you're a Chanhassen. Back with the big story next.
He does, and a base hit. Here comes Rizzo. No throw to the plate. Schwarber's delivered 2-0.
Obviously, a lot of excitement. There was a lot of emotion there. You know, obviously, you know, I really don't remember that moment.
Schwarber with another base hit. Comes up 4-0 here in the fifth inning. He's walking. It's 5-0 Chicago in the fifth. Ground ball is short. Addison Russell. The Cubs have evened the series. A 5-1 win in a 4-hour, 4-minute game.
I think the folks will be jacked up about the win tonight.
And we're back!
Hey, hey, hey!
Don't worry about a thing.
Joe Madden will say you got to take them one at a time. You got to stay in the moment. You know what he's right about that. But we don't have to. What do you think? Parade Monday or Tuesday?
Well, let's see. Monday, what's the forecast? 75 on Monday.
That's what I'm thinking. Weather related. We need to get it together quickly.
Yeah, but you know, if the series would end Sunday, that's too short a turnaround, I think, for a parade.
Well, we've got a history of athletes not being sober during celebrations in this town, so why should now be any different?
Yeah, but they usually don't do it the next day.
All right,
give
all right,
a day
all right,
or so.
All right. I'm just saying we need to, we need to get this going.
What do you have on the calendar next week?
It's been 108 years for crying out loud. Let's win one. Right?
Absolutely.
Who's with me? Let's go! Oh, Ryan Dempster's on the phone. The great Ryan Dempster. You got to be pretty.
I'm with you.
You got to be pretty
I'm
pumped
with you
up.
On that one.
Come on, man.
I'm with you. Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you a pitcher question. Jacob Arrieta, you know, look, great beard, and things are going pretty well. Maybe some control issues. He gets through 5 2/3, and there's a hit, and then suddenly it looks like the dam may break to some extent. what goes through a pitcher's mind at that point? Is it just you're super focused, you're in that no-hitter groove, and maybe you're a little let down, so maybe the next couple of batters you can count on that? Because we see it over and over again.
No, I think everybody always says that, but I think what happens is that lineup is facing you again for like the third time.
Ah.
So guys just like our hitters who when they face the guys after a little while, you start to just see the ball just a little bit better. You see where it's moving and next thing you know, base hit and, you know, the crowd starts getting into it. It was the first time it was kind of loud since about the second inning after that. So, you know, after that, he gave up the run and then the base hit and then Mike Montgomery came in and did what Andrew Miller does and shut down their offense for a little while. So that was pretty awesome.
What difference do you see, Ryan, in the Arrieta that we saw last night? And, I mean, he pitched pretty well against San Francisco. The lead got away from the Cubs in that game. But from earlier in the playoffs to last night, do you see any difference?
No, I thought, you know what, like, it's funny. He threw great in San Francisco. He threw good in L.A. other than the home run to Grandal. He did. He made a bunch of good pitches, and he gives up a home run. And because we don't score any runs, it gets magnified. So. And then last night, you know, he talked about it the day before, you know, like the night before on the way to the hotel, like, hey, this is my game. This is what I live for and this is what I want. And it can't be John Lester every time to go out there and everybody rely on him to throw a shutout. And it has to be somebody else's turn. And he went out there and took his turn in the rotation and when was lights out for, especially after that first inning, he settled down and then just started making pitch after pitch and coming up with the big pitches when he needed to and reminiscent of the guy that we see win the Cy Young last year. And like Joe said it this year, he set this bar so high that if he's not absolutely dominant every single time out, people wonder what's wrong. So he still has that presence out there and that ability to go out there and dominate a game like he did yesterday.
Talk about a batter's third time around against a pitcher. But let's look at the challenges that a pitcher faces when he's facing a team which isn't familiar with him for the second time. Now, Corey Kluber obviously was locked in game one, but now he's going to pitch again this weekend at Wrigley Field. What are the difficulties for him now facing the Cubs second time around? Because we saw when they faced Kershaw the second time in that series, it was a much different story.
Yeah, well, I think even in the game that Corey Kluber pitched, you know, I understand that he, you know, had a bunch of punch outs and his end numbers ended up really good. But if after the first time through the lineup where he punched out 8 of the 9 outs, you start to look at the at bats that guys were having and start to get onto base. And we had to start to have a few rallies and a few things here and there. So that just shows you how prepared these guys are as hitters. They're ready. They work the count. They get pitches. I mean, you try and find many ball games where you see 150 pitches as a lineup and don't score any runs is rare. And that just showed you in game one what they did. They saw pitches. They, you know, they saw everything he threw, his fastball, his two seamer, his slider, and he'll be ready again. This guy works really hard, but you know, we can't get too hard far ahead of ourselves too fast. We still got a game three to worry about and go out there and try and take care of business in that game.
Demps, let's talk about Kyle Schwarber, how awesome he is, what a spark plug he was to that lineup, in addition to the runs that he drove in. Now everybody looking ahead to have him possibly playing at Wrigley Field. What are your thoughts on that? A good idea, bad idea for his health? You know what I mean? Because I look at it as, oh, sure. God, I don't want him to get hurt again, but now's the time, right?
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, at times you got to be a little bit realistic, too, and realize that he has not taken any ground balls. He's not taken any fly balls. And, like, it's one thing to sit in a batter's box and run the bases, which he's been doing, but it's another thing to go out there and stop and start and play the outfield. So I know that we have a workout today, and he'll be out there getting his work in, and I'm sure they'll talk with the doctors and make all those decisions. But even if it doesn't happen, you gotta look at what a luxury that is to have that back coming off the bench late in the game and doing some damage somewhere in a big situation. So, yeah, absolutely amazing what he's done. I've never seen anything like it. To do what he's done has been absolutely incredible. His hard work that he put in the weight room and in the cage and then kind of under the radar while nobody was really paying attention. And
well, because I don't think people understand. He blew his knee up, right?
Reconstruction, ACL, MCL, you know, just had to have the whole thing reconstructed and then to come back and put the work in that he has. I mean, this guy was down in the batting cage in Arizona for 12 hours a day, tracking pitches, sitting in a batting cage and watching the pitches go by, 300 of them, take a break, go in, have something to eat, come back out, track another 300 pitches, track curveballs, sliders, changeups, everything he needed to do so that when he did get in the box that he would be ready. And it's amazing. It's an incredible story what he's done just to come back and then let alone to have the success that he's had. Good for him.
Yeah, no kidding. Locked in. You like the way the weekend sets up pitching wise?
Yeah, I do. I like our home fans and our crowd and Kyle throwing in game three. He's been throwing the ball great. Lackey out there. I mean, you're not going to get a more pedigreed pitcher ready to go in game four and John coming back in game five. I like the way everything lines up, and I really like just game three. I'm excited for enjoying that moment. I think that's been the most fun. I talk about that all year about this team. These guys live in the moment as much as anybody I've been around, and they're excited for game three at home in front of our crowd, and it's going to be a lot of fun to be there.
You were, from what I could gather, Ryan, pretty emotional last Saturday night after they won.
Yeah, man, it means a lot to me. It means a lot. I look at all the hard work that everybody puts in, not just the players and the coaches and the trainers, but, you know, the front office and the scouts and the people who go spend the entire season on the road scouting the opposition to find out what weakness they have. And you watch all these guys and how much it means to them, and then the fans. And, like, I've been in Chicago for a long time and got to know season ticket holders on a personal basis and stories after stories, and just these people who you finally see their lifelong dream come to fruition of seeing their Chicago Cubs go to the World Series. It is emotional. It's very intense. It's very satisfying. And then to enjoy it and then turn around and realize that we're not done yet and we still got three more wins to go. So it's just been a huge monumentous thing in here in Chicago. And is monumentous even a word? Monumental thing.
It is now.
And monumentous is fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
Totally fine.
But it's just incredible. It really is. And just to see, I can't imagine what it's going to be like. I know we left there about 1 o'clock in the morning last Saturday and they had to park the Red Sea to get us out of there. So it's going to be just crazy in there.
And the good news is I just received word from the Cubs. They're going to bring back dead President Teddy Roosevelt to throw out the first pitch from 1908. So that's exciting.
Perfect. Oh, awesome.
So that's exciting.
Yeah, he's got a heck of an arm.
Yes, he does. Yeah. He's filthy, as you guys say. Congratulations, man. As a Cub alumni at the highest level, you got to be thrilled. You got to be emotional. And I can't believe how much fun it's going to be for you this weekend.
No, thanks. No, it really is. And it's going to be a blast. Do you see all the guys that when you speak of Cub alumni, guys that are coming back? And I know so many ex-players that are coming into town for this, because when you put a Chicago Cub uniform on before this year, everybody had that expectation of this is the year. This is the year we're going to go to the World Series. And so players, you kind of carried that, I don't know, it's not a burden. You carried that desire too, and you wanted it just as much as the fans did, especially anybody who played here for any kind of time. And to see all these guys that are going to come back, you know, the Mark Pryors, the Moises Alous, you know, it's awesome. And it all means so much to everybody, like I said. And it's just a fun experience. We're enjoying the moment, living in the moment, sitting in the stands in Cleveland last night in the Cubs section. It was just an absolute blast. Everybody's trying to yell, "Let's go Tribe!" And I'm making sure that we're yelling, "Let's go Cubbies!" So it's going to be a lot of fun. Saturday night's going to be like a sporting event. I don't know if we've seen anything like it in a long time.
Do we know if they're going to do an alumni parade of some sort where you roll out all the guys that have come into town? Is that a surprise? I mean, go ahead and blow it if it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I just fresh off the plane at 3 o'clock in the morning last night, so I'll have to check my emails and see if that's happening.
Yeah, don't pressure them. Deb, where are our seats? Where are we sitting? That's it.
Call him at 10.
Not that it matters.
No, call him at 10. Yeah. He'll let you know then. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll find out when I get him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gonna be pretty awesome.
Yeah, because he just got in. I don't know if you heard. He just got it.
3 o'clock.
Yeah. Great job, Demps. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Let's get him tomorrow.
All right, there you go, Ryan Demps. Wintrust, home of Cubs checking and Sloan Water Connects Us, brings us all of this Cubs coverage. And, of course, Wintrust Community Banks brings you the 8 o'clock hour. How about we do this? Bone of beef. You can watch the Cubs play in style with your World Series Cubs Party Pack. Party food for 12. Includes all the bone of beef that you need for 12 people and the whole deal. Bona.com to order your own, BUONA.com. Let's see. Seven? Caller seven.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I have never been accused of being ahead of schedule before. I couldn't be more proud. 9/11. John DeCostas here. John, you do an event every year for a good group of friends. And as you know, we do a lot of military charitable plugs here for the right reasons. And this would be one that we certainly ought to mention.
Without a doubt. And I'm so glad that this is, please, I'm introducing Laura Franz. Yes. From TLS, Transforming Lives Through Service in McHenry. We did a wonderful show in August. You raised a lot of money. It was so much fun. And you've got something coming up. First of all, tell us about TLS.
Okay, I'm happy to, and thank you again so much for having us on TLS Veterans. So let me tell you a story that'll introduce TLS. We have many different types of veterans and active military that come into our shops. We have one in Hebron, one in McHenry, and we serve McHenry County, Lake County, Cook County, and Kenosha. So we're pretty widespread.
And when you say come into your shops, they're coming in for?
They're coming in for food, shelter, clothing, veteran support, help with claims, employment assistance.
Life assistance in general.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So we had a veteran that showed up on our doorstep about a month ago, and he had been put out of the house of the person he was living with and literally came to us with nothing, clothes on his back. And he had a job, had been homeless, living in his car for a few days. And so our employment program stepped in with him first to talk about what to say to his place of employment so that he could keep his job. Our food pantry stepped in, gave him food that he could eat because he hadn't for a couple days, had nothing. We talked with our shelter in Hebron about whether there was a spot for him and if it would work for him, given how far he lived from how far Hebron is from where he worked.
Sure.
And then finally, we hooked him up with our veteran peer support specialist in our drop-in resource center, and they worked with our housing program to find housing for him close to where he lives so that he can do without a car. So he's been, we've been supporting him with food and, you know, keeping tabs with him. And just within the last couple of weeks, his father passed away, and he walked all the way from where he lives to our drop-in resource center to be with veterans for the day during his period of bereavement. Is the level of support and genuine connection that our staff, half of whom are veterans themselves.
Thank God you were there for
friendly. Oh, I agree. And he's just one of many. One of many.
How's he doing now?
He's doing
well. I mean, obviously grieving, but how's he doing now in general?
He's doing well.
Wow. Yeah, you should be very proud of that.
Yes.
How did you get involved?
Well, I've been there for a little bit over a year. I had done most of my career in child welfare, which is, you know, children and families that have experienced trauma one way or another.
Sure, another lighthearted endeavor on your part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wonderful. You know, it's wonderful, inspiring work. It's about overcoming tremendous odds. And people came forward to tell me about this opportunity a little over a year ago. And at first I thought, well, I have a little bit of experience with veterans. When I came and met with the board and they talked about the work that they do and their passion for veterans, and it became clear it's the same thing. It's about overcoming what seems to be insurmountable odds.
So it was an easy sell for you to make a career change of sorts.
Yeah, and not so much of a career change, a little bit.
Of sorts,
still,
right. Yeah. Do you come from a military family?
I do not. No, I married into a military family and now know many military families.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, I just think it's interesting, too, because it sort of reinforces the theory we have that regardless of how you feel politically, we're in a state in this country where we are good to veterans, not good enough yet, but we're working on it.
Correct.
So good for you.
Yeah.
Got a big shindig coming up?
We do. November 5th, we have a 20th anniversary celebration. And for nonprofit veterans organizations, achieving 20 years is
amazing.
It is amazing.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I give a lot of credit to our founder, Alan Belcher, Vietnam combat veteran, who started the whole thing. But November 5th, it's at the Dole Mansion Lakeside Legacy that's in Crystal Lake. Starts at 6. It's going to be just a fun celebration. Open bar for an hour, dancing, we hope, silent auction, a couple of speakers, and really just a great time to celebrate all the lives we've touched for the last 20 years. Many, many lives.
Well, John, you and I love Crystal Lake. We did the New Year's Eve show there forever. We're doing the Rouse Center again for a matinee this New Year's Eve.
Oh, outstanding.
And the Dole Mansion Do you know the Dole Mansion?
No, actually, I do not know the Dole Mansion.
Yeah, tell people about that a little bit.
It's a wonderful venue for many different kinds of events. It's old. People showcase their artwork there. There will be a veterans art show there the day that we're there.
Very cool.
And it can be, again, used for many different venues. It's really big. The grounds are beautiful.
Historic and beautiful.
Yes.
Perfect setting for this.
Yes.
Saturday night, November 5th, 6 to 10, 20 years, 20 stories. It is the gala for really an amazing organization, and we like to alert you to places that maybe you haven't heard about so much. I like this, and transforming lives through service is a good deal, so I hope you can make it. If people can't make it, can they donate through our website?
Absolutely, or our Facebook page.
All right, yes. Give us those addresses.
We'd appreciate the www.tlsveterans.org.
tlsveterans.org. What about the Facebook page?
TLS Veterans.
All right, yeah. Easy enough. Nice job, Laura.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the work you're doing every day.
It's a great team there.
John, I don't know that you were much help.
I didn't plan on being any help. Let me just clarify
Laura
that. I didn't even bring her in.
She drove herself.
She got here on her own.
But you read the note to introduce her.
I sat here and read the notes.
John, without you, we couldn't get anything done.
Yes. Tell me more about Dole.
No, that's different.
Oh, that's
you guys talk off the air.
All right.
9:17. Good luck, Laura.
Thank you.
Support transforming lives through service. We're back after this. But first, Andrea, what do you have?
Well, Walter's Perspective is sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
Here we go again at the end of October. Here I go again making plans to avoid Halloween. One thing I know I will not do is look out my window for fear of seeing a child in the dark, costumed in black, dashing across my street for a treat, or a car screeching to a stop, or a parent screaming for help. And I will not answer a knock at my door for fear of being confronted by an extortionist. Give me a treat or I'll give you a trick, demanding that I pay up or pay a price. Why should I stuff candy into a plastic pumpkin in fear that I'll be damaging a child's teeth or starting a child on a path to obesity or diabetes? What pleasure is there in terrorizing children or the elderly with a sneering rat or scowling witch or skulls and skeletons in my front yard? As a parent and grandparent, I see Halloween as an unkind and often dangerous holiday, and I often wonder why we celebrate it. I just can't come up with a reason. I'm Walter Jacobson, and that's my perspective. For more, visit WGNplus.com.
Steve Cochran Show. Billy Gardell, my old buddy with Mike Amali. You know Mike Amali got canceled, right?
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of rumors. The internet's ridiculous. That Molly, Melissa McCarthy, lost so much weight, the producers of the show and CBS said, we can't do the show anymore. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why.
No.
The fact of the matter is, she's a big movie star, and she's getting lots of offers to do movies, and the time schedules for the two of them don't jive. Fortunately, Billy's a great guy, and Billy's always busy, and I talked to him yesterday. I said, Billy, man, they must be throwing scripts at you left and right now.
You know what, man? I wanted to do something different after Mike and Molly, so I took a dramatic role and filmed this show called The Million Dollar Quartet.
Yep.
Over the summer, which is about the beginning of Sun Studios, with Carl Perkins, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Johnny Cash, and Sam Phillips, who created Sun Studios. And I got to play the devious Colonel Tom Parker, Elvis's manager.
How great is that?
And it was really super fun to go from Mike Biggs and Mike and Molly, who was like always doing the right thing, to a guy in the Colonel Parker, you know, who just will lie when the truth works. So it was really fun to change gears like that.
Did you channel any Trump in there?
Yeah, I think he's got a little Trump in him. Yeah. I think he was probably a little more scrupulous.
You know, you and I, you know, weren't really old enough to be core Elvis fans. Obviously, you get how talented he was. But when you think about all the protection talent gets now, and talent still gets screwed if they're not paying attention.
Without a doubt, man. It's a vicious game. You know, you need agents, you need lawyers. And, you know, Colonel Parker was, you know, he was a guy that was too greedy with Elvis. You know, he took too much money, but he took a lot of dough. Like, at the end, he was there, I think, at 50%, which is just ridiculous.
It's unbelievable.
But you could almost justify about 30%, and I never thought about that before, because I pay like an agent, a lawyer, a manager, and a publicist.
Right.
So these are all percentages, and Colonel Parker did all those things for Elvis. But then he got greedy at the end.
But couldn't you make the argument, and I'm not defending how he acted, but couldn't you make the argument that Elvis doesn't become a star without him?
You could very much make that argument. The more I learned about him down in Memphis, and I got some access to people who knew him, and he was, you know, the record business was trying to turn Elvis into just a simple country singer.
Yep.
And Colonel Parker was the guy that saw, no, this guy is, he is rock and roll. And he promoted him as such and had the vision to know what Elvis could have been.
You know, when you're coming up and you're doing stand-up, and obviously you get a huge hit sitcom like you've had, and now you get a shot to play a role like this, I mean, do you still have those pinch-yourself moments? Because there's nobody that's more of a regular guy than you. This has got to be just great.
You know, I absolutely do, man. I was giddy to get that role. To you know, every actor thinks the minute your job's done, that's the last time you're ever going to work. But because of Mike and Molly, man, it put me in an arena that I was able to get a role like this. And I absolutely still feel incredible gratitude anytime I get to work. It's such a gift to be able to do this, you know. I'm very blessed. And if you'd have told me when I was 17 that it 300 pounds I'd be a leading man, I would have looked at you like you were crazy. and that worked out. And the gift through all the acting is my stand-up career benefits from all that. You know, I go from playing small rooms and Mike and Molly hits, and suddenly I'm doing theaters and casinos. And yeah, man, I'm very, very grateful for everything that's happened to me. And I do still get those moments when I go to the stage, or, you know, when it's time to do wardrobe, or you get that first action of the day. You know, it's a big deal to me still.
And by the way, in doing stand-up, when you get to do a theater like the Paramount in Aurora, which is, you know, one of the classic great old theaters in America. With the
a lot of great ghosts on that stage, man. I'm really looking forward to it. A lot of great comedians played there. Smothers Brothers, Richard Pryor, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm really, really looking forward to being a part of that.
And it's November 12th, so it's coming up. This is a good early Christmas present for you or your friends or your family. And it will sell out, so get your tickets. You can do it through the Paramount Theater's box office. It's ParamountAurora.com, by the way, for all their events. Ticketmaster, if you go to Billy's website, there's links everywhere. You Google Billy Gardell, Chicago, Billy Gardell, November 12th, Billy Gardell, Paramount. It'll all come up, and get your tickets for that show. All right, let's talk a little football for a second. The Bears are horrific, nightmarishly bad. They're just awful. But how about your Steelers? Are they going to be okay?
You know, we'll figure out what's going on with Ben's knee, and it seems, you know, as he goes, we go, you know. So, you know, I think our division is, we're not the strongest division in the league. We were looking like we were going to run away with it for at the beginning there, but, you know, injuries pop up, and you have to weather those storms. But I think if he can get back in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I think we still have a chance to win our division by the end of the year.
And the Penguins and Blackhawks still considered to be the two best in the East and the West, even though the Hawks are off to a little bit of a bumpy start. But I never asked you this. How big a hockey guy are you? Are you as big as I am on this?
Yeah, I'm a Penguins guy, man. I'm a Penguins guy. I really love I all my teams are Pirates, Penguins, and Steelers, all black and gold. And you know, when it was Mike Biggs, that's like my alter ego. So I had to wear Cubs hats and stuff and Blackhawks jerseys at work. So I have a respect for those teams and a respect for the way Chicago's passionate about its teams. Pittsburgh's the same way. We had early on in Mike and Molly, we had a birthday party for Mike, and the props guys brought in White Sox paper plates and Chicago Cubs paper cups. And I said to him, I go, man, you got to pick a side here. You can't, you can't cross the streams here, man. We'll get letters. So they decided to make Mike a Cubs fan.
Those are like magnets. You can't even put the cup on the plate.
No. Those two teams have divided households.
That's unbelievable. All right, let's make a deal right now. So let's fast forward to springtime. If the Hawks and the Penguins end up in the cup, you and I'll do home and home. I'll get you tickets here. We'll come there, do a show, and you and I will see. You and I will do games in both places.
I would do that with you, man. That would be killer.
Yeah. So let's pull for that. Hawks and Penguins. Man, what a cup that would be.
That would be the cup right there.
In the meantime, good luck to your Steelers and the Bears. Draft choice. That's the chant going on now. So Billy Gardell, go see him. He's very, very funny. And by the way, if he and I end up doing games in both cities, we will need a safety seat between us. We got to stretch out, man. A couple of big boys. A
couple $1,000 for that seat, too.
Yeah, we'll do what we can. 929, back with the big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
It's Wang Dang Doodle Time.
351! Rover, sit! Hut, hut!
I could care less. Wait, I couldn't care less. Whatever.
That's our commissioner, Big O, Orion Samuelson. All right, can't put this off any longer, I guess. Time for the Wang Dang Doodle Don't Care picks. Let's go to the Don't Care Captain, Mary Vandeveld. Do you have a team meeting?
Our team isn't even situated.
What are you talking about?
Well, I don't know where they are.
Well, John's here.
We're all here.
John is actually,
Bennett's
well,
here.
Grzanich
the only one you're missing
around.
Is Grzanich. I don't think Grzanich runs.
Did you guys say you brought in beef sandwiches? Is he down there?
Of course he is. That's exactly right. Where
except
he is.
Except for the sandwiches are on the seventh floor. So.
Yeah. Don't tell him. Just enjoy watching him run around from floor to floor.
Again, Grzanich doesn't run.
Just saw him running by.
I'm hoping he lets me post his Harry Carey impression on the website.
That wouldn't help. That would probably be the new goat curse. All right, so let's go to the picks. Who's first?
I am, and I'm taking Prescott. I'm taking the Cowboys 21-6.
Dak Prescott, Cowboys 21-6. Next!
You with the efficiency.
Bennett, the worst scoring member of your team. Mary, any advice?
Come on, Bennett.
I wear that title loud and proud.
You wear it proud. Okay, you're quarterback this week?
Cody Kessler.
I'm sorry, who?
Cody Kessler.
He works here on the weekends. Oh, no, wait.
Cody Kessler.
It's Bob Kessler.
Is he like the last ranked?
I found his name on the internet, right? That's him.
Is he even playing this weekend?
Cody Kessler is the fifth string quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
That's great.
What do you think? Some Indians mojo is going to get on him or something?
Oh, no. All right. Sorry. That was the wrong one.
Oh, there's a practice pick?
Yes.
Bennett, you should pick Dan Marino.
Didn't go too well.
Yes.
Jameis Winston.
Jameis Winston, the felon.
QB.
That's a good pick.
Crab legs.
The unconvicted felon from Tampa Bay. How about a score?
I don't look past their helmets. That's just right on the show.
That's good. That's good.
Raiders, Buccaneers. The Raiders are going to win it 17-14.
17-14.
Yeah.
He was doing well until, that's a possibility. Raiders are a decent team.
Okay, but you picked Jameis Winston, who plays for the Buccaneers.
Yeah, don't help.
Okay. I stand with my decision.
John DeCass.
John Kirk Cousins. John is doing surprisingly well.
I think he threw a touchdown last week.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins, and I'm taking Jags over the Titans 35-21. Next.
Look at him. Look following at you. Directions. I like it.
Sandberg threatened him off the air.
Mary Vandeveld.
Oh, did anybody pick Matt Ryan?
Yeah, my mom.
Oh.
No, she changed her mind.
She changed her mind. That's
so Matt Ryan's available. Sorry.
Yeah, look how I pay attention.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, I'll take Matt Ryan and Detroit over Houston. 28-14.
All right. And you can get Grzanich's pick post show, right?
I'm going to take Cutler for Grzanich.
Okay.
No. Yeah, that's good.
No, do and not. Yeah. Take Cam Newton.
And he's going to have the Bears win 21-20.
That's good. I like that. All right. That seems to make sense. Well done by you.
Better than he would have done.
All right, Mary, how do you think your team's going to do?
Well, considering you took all the top five quarterbacks, I don't know.
I don't know what your guys' problem
as
is.
As usual.
Yeah. It's 9:45. If the audience responds and lets Mary know that we have to let the losers pick first next time, then we'll... I mean, the don't cares. The don't cares pick first next time.
They did.
Then we'll consider.
I saw a text yesterday.
I saw a text,
and one of the listeners was so nice, and she said, you should have the don't cares pick first.
Did you text in there, Mary?
No, I saw... I swear I saw
There's about 500,000 people that listen to this show. We're going to need more than one. We'll do a recount coming up. But if you want the don't cares to pick, you should let us know. It's 9:45. We're back with Tim Tebow shortly. Yes, David?
Can you explain the rules again?
Yes, off the air. On 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
A listener named Andrea just texted in and said, I don't think you interrupt Dave enough at all. Thank you, listener Andrea.
It was nice.
Tim Tebow's got a brand new book out called Shaken, Tackling Life's Obstacles, a former NFL quarterback, and stories and fear, rejection, criticism, and identity. He'll join us in just a second. Did you see that the cover story in Wrigley Field bars apparently is real? John Barleycorn has a $250 package that will get you an entree, an appetizer, and drinks for a couple of hours. And obviously, you can sit there and watch their TV feet from Wrigley. Mm-hmm. We had heard stories about this yesterday. Who is it? Was it? Who said they wouldn't do that?
Murphy's. There's five bars that are not charging covers. Murphy's, Vines, Irish Oak, Johnny O'Hagan's, and Sports Corner.
Well, good memory.
Or not.
The Cubby Bear is charging $100 for fans to enter. Deuces and Diamonds looks like they're around the $250 area as well. You can get a four top for $500. So I don't know. I know you guys think it's wrong. I've got mixed emotions about it. I really do, because this is a very special event, and they are running a business. And I think upcharging is maybe appropriate, but I don't think upcharging to $500 is a great idea. But, you know, if you can get it, get it.
I think if you are offering something in return beyond admittance to the establishment, I think it's...
appetizer.
Okay. Okay. Like, I'm not thinking a shrimp kebab. I was thinking a little more than that.
Well, in their defense, the Four Tops haven't had a new release in like 30 years.
The Four Tops don't have to pay. They come in, they get a table on it anyway. No, they have space. Their space is valuable. You can watch the game at home. If the market bears it and people pay, they pay.
You know what else some of these bars are doing? Not necessarily the one I'm going to, but it is. They're making you get there 3 to 4 hours ahead of time.
Well, you have TSA clearance. You'll be fine.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Tackling life's obstacles. Tim Tebow joins us. Mr. Tebow, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great. Nice to have you on the show. I've been a fan for a long time. We haven't talked, I don't think, since you
Thank
were
you.
A rookie, but it's nice to have you back.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And let me just say, I respect your courage about your faith and your Christianity. I don't think you ever got a fair shot in the National Football League, and I wish you nothing but success with baseball.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I've been having a lot of fun playing every day. We got a game tonight, so it's amazing how much fun something is when you're just doing it for the love of it.
Are you picking the Cubs in 5, 6, or 7?
I actually think it's going to be a really good series. I mean, you look at 1 and 2, and it's been really competitive, really good games, and you know, whichever team kind of jumps out with that early momentum has been able to hang on to it. And it's just amazing how much momentum plays in these games. And you know, going back to Chicago, it'll be interesting to see what that, you know, home field advantage is going to do.
Let me see here, Tim. We're on WGN in Chicago. Are you picking the Cubs in 5, 6, or 7?
I love it. Well, I tell you what, they got Bryant Rizzo hitting it right now. I mean, it's gonna be tough for them to lose. All right. All that pitching.
I'll put you down for 5. Dave Bennett, say hi to Tim.
Good morning, Tim. Just real quick, did you happen to cross paths out in Arizona with Kyle Schwarber?
I did. I do not think I crossed paths with him, no.
No, you would know.
I believe so.
Yeah, you would know,
no,
probably.
He had a game, though, huh?
Yeah, he was only there for a couple of days, though, in the Arizona Fall League. So
let's talk about your book for a second. And again, you can get it everywhere, Shaken. You know, I always say, Tim, get 2 copies. You're careless, you'll lose the first one. And that way you'll have it. You can download it as well, wherever books are sold. Let's talk about courage under pressure. You've certainly experienced that in college. You experienced in the pros. You had a legendary playoff game. You're certainly putting pressure on yourself and starting this new career, even though you say you're just doing it for fun. What about courage under pressure? What do you say in the book about it?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think understanding pressure is all about perspective. Perspective of what is real pressure. You know, I talk about courage under pressure in different ways, mostly with, you know, kids fighting life-threatening illnesses or orphans looking for where they're going to find their next meal. Like, playing baseball is not courage under pressure. It might look like it because I might get bashed in some of the media or people say, what are you doing? But that's not courage under pressure, not compared to what some people are doing out there. And I just think it's, you know, pressure is all about perspective. And then, you know, having courage, it's just when something's on your heart, choosing to fight for it, choosing to believe in it, and choosing not to stop because other people are going to, you know, want you to stop because, you know, they think they have a better plan for your life than you do. But, you know, I'm excited about this task, this journey for me, and you know, I'm just a believer that, you know, you go after what's on your heart, and when you do it with everything you have, you can look back 20, 30 years from now and not have to live with regret about what if. What if I would have tried? What if I would have had more courage?
Tim, it's so easy to say, don't listen to what others have to say, ignore the haters, but you've done that so well. How do you block that out and stay so focused?
It's hard. You know, honestly, I've had a lot of practice for the last 12 years or so, and I think sometimes I've done it well, and I think sometimes I haven't done it well. You know, sometimes I think I let what people were saying get to me too much, and but I think I've gotten a lot better, and I think it's something that's not easy. But what I really try to do is not even pay attention to it. Like, don't even let it go in one ear and out the other. Just try not to let it even get close to an ear. Just focus on what you love. Go after it. Don't look at the social media. Don't look at the newspapers. Don't pay attention to it. Do it for the right reasons. And sometimes it can be, when we look at too much stuff, the right reasons can get so complicated because we don't even know what they are because we're so afraid. We've been cluttered with so much junk and so much talk and everything else. And so I think it's important to not listen to, you know, the people that are going to try to tear you down. And I also touched about voices of negativity in this book and you know, how we can't give them a voice. We can't listen to them because so many of those people are the people that are going to tell you that you won't, that you couldn't, that you shouldn't. And a lot of times those are the people that they didn't try to go after their dream. And so they're just going to try to bring you down.
Tim, there have been a couple of instances in the past year where you have found yourself coming to the aid of somebody in trouble. Once on a flight, I believe, a cross-country flight from Atlanta to Phoenix, if I'm not mistaken. Man was having a medical emergency. And then recently in the Arizona Fall League, I think, where a man was having a seizure. Do these things just seem to find you when people are in trouble?
You know, I don't know. There were just two instances that happened around me. And you know, it's so interesting. People with, you know, mention things about, oh, that was, you know, good of you to help or something. And I just think, like, what other choice do you have? You know,
exactly.
Honestly,
right.
When someone,
it's exactly
people
right.
are fighting for their life, what choice do you have? Like, you know, what am I going to do? Go get on the early after the game? Or what am I going to do? Go get my bag from baggage claim? Like, it's not.
Right. You're going to walk. Hey, good luck with that seizure. I got a cab waiting. Come on.
No, it's just there's, you know, I just think it's so important that we understand, you know, that how valuable people are and how they matter and how we should treat people. And when someone's in need, there's not anything more important that you could be doing. You try to help that need and meet however you can and help that person. And for me, if it was just praying with them, holding their hand,
sure.
you know, trying to take their mind off of it, whatever it was, you know, that's what I wanted to do, was to be there for, you know, for those people, to try to help them and genuinely love them and care about them. And, you know, I think that the thing that sometimes was a little bit disappointing for me in the midst of some of those situations is some of the people that just want to get out their phone and put it on Instagram to create Instagram followers or whatever it is. And it's like, you know, someone's fighting for their life here. Let's just focus together, come together as people and help this person rather than to, you know, and try to gain 100 followers.
Amen. Amen and amen. Shaken, tackling life's obstacles. It's Tim Tebow, discovering your true identity in the midst of life storms. It's called Shaken. Go out and get it and get a couple copies. Share it with your friends. It's an early Christmas present that I think is a good one. Tim, I wish you nothing but success.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And thanks for being on the Steve Cochran Show. Minute before 10, news is next.